Unity can be very dangerous, right? Like unity within the police force, for example, where you've united so strongly with your fellow boys in blue that you won't report them if they murder, abuse, physically assault people, or anything of that nature. Welcome to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Without Will! On AmericanFreedomRadio.com and the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Got some ridiculous news for you today. Number one on the agenda, this is from Drudge Report, now posted on GorillaMedia.co.nz, US to bail out EU. Both set up by globalists. The United States will be ready to support the extension of the European Financial Stability Facility, whatever the heck that means, via an extra commitment of money from the International Monetary Fund, a US official told Reuters on Wednesday. There are a lot of people talking about that. I think the European Commission has talked about that, said the US official, commenting on enlarging the 750 billion euro, which is about 980 billion US, close to a trillion bucks, EU and IMF European Stability Fund. It is up to the Europeans, and we will certainly support using the IMF in these circumstances. And in my opinion, anybody who supports the IMF supports the New World Order and enslaving the bulk of humanity and destroying the economy and making sure everybody's just basically a serf on a global plantation. There are obviously some severe market problems, said the official, speaking on condition of anonymity. It was Greece, this is Ireland and Portugal, and if there is contagion, that's a huge problem for the global economy. And next segment, I'm going to be playing a wee clip for you from Jim Corr of The Cause, you know, a fabulous Irish band. He's a bit of a truther, encouraging the Irish people to take to the streets and to understand the global banking heist that is taking place right now as the elite banksters consolidate the world's wealth in debt sovereign nations in an effort to take over all of their social services and maintain control over the world via economic tyranny. Now, the remarks foreshadow a visit to Europe this week by US Secretary Treasury Envoy, who was expected to visit Berlin, Madrid, and Paris and to hold talks on the ramifications of the debt crisis. And the developments have echoes of the pressure applied by Washington on European capitals last May to create the near $1 trillion safety net that was last week used to rescue Ireland after its banking crisis spiraled out of control. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, and we too are spiraling out of control. And we'll be right back.
Hi, my name is Jim Corr. My fellow countrymen and women, as you well know, we've got a major problem. I'm not sure we fully realize that these further bailouts and the imposition of budgetary austerity measures are going to result in the further impoverishment of our dear country and its citizens. You may not agree with all of my views, but I came out and I told the Irish nation the truth as I see it on a number of issues. I warned people that based on historical fact, I believe this financial crash to be engineered, designed so as to effect a corporate takeover of not just our own country, but many countries. When I campaigned against the Lisbon Treaty, I warned that the agenda was the gradual erosion of our national sovereignty. Now we have our budgetary policy being dictated by Brussels. We can no longer call ourselves a sovereign nation. I told the Irish people the agenda was the creation of a one world currency. We now have that in the form of both special drawing rights and the Bancor. I believe I've been vindicated on many issues, not that it makes me feel any better, it's cold comfort. Some elements in the media may continue their ad hominem attacks on me, I can take it, but bear in mind, an attack on me is an attack on the free-thinking people of this country. Anyway, let us all put our differences aside and come together for the sake of our children. Our country is under predatory economic attack, an attack as potentially devastating as conventional warfare. Ireland is currently in the forefront of this war, affecting other European countries also. Once this nation capitulates, they will move on to do the same to the other European nations. What we are witnessing, I believe, is a top-down engineered financial crash, cleverly designed so as to shear the wealth from the masses and to cripple our country and others under inescapable debt to an extent that we've no choice but to sell off our national assets, state agencies and natural resources, essentially to the same people and their proxies involved in this clever scam. I hope we realise just how devastating this is going to be if we let it happen. The ultimate aim is to gut our country of everything of value. Please take the time to study this further by watching the documentary Money as Debt on Google Video, or by going to the financial crisis section on my website. The root of the problem is that the issuing power of money is in private hands. The privatisation of monetary control will always, always, always benefit the privatisers and not the people. We should be printing our own debt-free currency. Through an expansion or a contraction of the money supply in the system, the people behind the money-issuing central banks of the world are able to move a great many people between prosperity and poverty. You must be asking where the money went. Money doesn't just disappear. It got transferred into the pockets of an elite. For their own selfish predatory ends, booms and busts are engineered by characters we refer to as the elite international bankers. Not every banker is in on this scam. Most are simply doing their job. This is orchestrated from the top down. We need to realise that on one level, the system is functioning perfectly to the benefit of an international banking cartel at the expense of millions and millions of people. The inflationary, deflationary monetary system is set up to ultimately benefit only those at the top controlling the system. If we let them, these same elite international bankers are not going to stop until they've got undisputed control over the entire wealth, natural resources and manpower of the entire world. It is going to take a global peaceful revolution to stop them in their tracks. Whether our own government is brainless or corrupt, they most certainly are not acting in the best interests of the Irish people. Our government has already presided over possibly the second greatest act of theft in our history, where at least 34 billion euros and rising of taxpayers' money has been transferred from we the people to the private banking corporations. The greatest act of theft in our history has to be the gifting of trillions of euros worth of gas and oil off the West Coast to Royal Dutch Shell, again by corrupt ministers in our government. The And nationalization of that oil and gas would solve our financial problems practically overnight. But no, our government is deciding to go a different route, which will leave our children submerged in debt for generations to come. Draconian welfare, healthcare, and pension cuts, etc., are about to be imposed upon the Irish people due to what can only be described as a sophisticated financial scam. The cost of fuel continues to rise, and the general cost of living is not reducing. How can people be expected to survive in this situation? My dear people, we have got to take action. The level of apathy, abdication, and despondency amongst the Irish people is shocking. Some people appear to be more concerned with what's happening on X Factor or Coronation Street than they are of their own country and where it's headed. Both Greece and France cannot believe our inaction. What is happening to the Irish spirit? I am asking that the Irish people unite as our forefathers did and take to the streets to voice our anger and concern over the actions of our politicians and what is happening to our country. This must be done peacefully. Violence will only play into the hands of an elite who will use it as an excuse to initiate a crackdown and to impose draconian police state measures. South Koreans peacefully protested the importation of growth hormone contaminated beef and the fines being imposed upon them by the World Bank for not doing so. They won, but it took shutting down the capital for 7 days and seven nights. I appeal to the police and the Irish Army that you will ultimately side with the people of this country when the time is right. Your own children's futures are very much at stake here, as well as everybody else's. Peaceful mass non-compliance is the only way forward. It will be assumed that anyone engaging in violence will be provocateurs. They will need to be gently pushed by the crowd towards the police lines and handed back. I'm asking that the media, journalists, editors, and the owners properly side with the people of this country. I'm asking that the farmers and fishermen join with us. They more than most have already felt the harsh bite of the EU to the detriment of the future supply in this country. I'm asking that we join with the unions who will already be there. I'm asking that lorry and bus drivers join with us. We may need to shut down the capital for an extended period of time until we are listened to and until the necessary citizen benefiting changes are made. I'm asking that politicians of integrity join with us. I'm asking that all the people of this country join with us in a march to the GPO. We have given our power away and now it's time to take it back. There is another way. Here are our solutions. We mainly need to follow Iceland's example being, we need to default on the debt because the debt is a scam anyway and it's inescapable. Money issuing central banks create money literally out of thin air through the fractional reserve system and then charge interest on it. We need to say no to the EU, the IMF, World Bank. They are merely a front for the international bankers. We need to get out of the EU and back into the European Economic Area and restart the setting of our own monetary policy. There will be pain for a while, but at least we'll be securing a future for our children. We need to take back the issuing power of debt-free money. We need to nationalize our natural resources. They belong to the people of this country. We need to install people of integrity in our government, people who have only got the best interests of our citizens in mind, not their own self-interest. Politicians in Ireland have contributed greatly to the current problem. But politics as a process has made a more significant contribution, and we need to find a new way of process in order to regain a healthy and decent quality of life. For the sake of our children and our grandchildren, please let's unite and take action. Let us all in time be able to look our grandchildren in the eyes and say we tried our very best. Let us walk together in solidarity to the GPO Dublin assembling at Wood Quay, Dublin at 11 a.m. Saturday the 27th. It's a start. Please do everything you can to make this video go viral immediately by sending it to everyone you know. Thank you.
And, you know, what's funny about that clip is that he's talking specifically about Ireland, right? And in my opinion, you can just interchange everything, you know? He's talking about people instead watching Coronation Street or whatever, and in New Zealand it's Shortland Street, and I'm sure there's some other description of television show in the United States that has the word street as part of its title. It's almost like, well, it is. We've turned into a globalized society. Right? Pretty straightforward, I would have thought. Now, there's a good side and a bad side to that coin. Number one, it means that we're all under the same system of oppression, which in my opinion isn't very nice. But number two, it means that we're united in our common enemy, the banking scumbags. Whether or not we're capable, you know, as a people, free citizens of humanity the world over, of exposing these filth, mongery, scumbag, seven words that you can't say on radio type people. If we're capable of doing that, and I believe we are, then we might endure some description of golden age of humanity. However, it's always darkest before the dawn. And a famous quote from V for Vendetta: every time I've seen this world change, it's always been for the worse. Seems to be that way for a lot of people, because there's a lot of bad news, isn't there? Speaking of banker scumbags, the IMF, whose biggest shareholder happens to be the United States, has committed 250 billion euros to bail out these people. And while reluctant to dictate to Europe how it should address the unfolding debt crisis, the US government is growing concerned about the global fallout of Europe's predicament. US Treasury prices fell and the euro strengthened against the dollar on Wednesday after the news that the United States would be prepared to support an enlarged version of it. Now, Germany, whose leaders have expressed frustration at the market backlash against their plans to solve the Eurozone's debt problems, does not want to make the stability fund larger. Yep, sounds about right. After all, getting yourself into debt is not a good way to solve your debt crisis. Is anybody effing home? I mean, come on. Has anybody ever done math? You know, what's 1 + 1? Oh, it's 37. And you'd figure the people who, you know, are running the economies of the world would have at least some kind of rudimentary economic knowledge. Apparently not. You know, I remember one time when I was pretty badly into debt, and I already had a loan taken out that I was paying off. Then I hit a car and I had to pay for it to be repaired, that kind of thing. And I thought I was real screwed, you know, and I wanted to get another loan to bail me out of that. And my auntie told me, nah, not giving it to you. Absolutely not. You'll just go downhill even further. And I was really frustrated at the time until recently when I realized, hey, I've got a lot less debt because I didn't take out a huge loan and pay huge amounts of interest on it. Fantastic. Now, if a little guy here in New Zealand can work that out based on the advice of his auntie, you'd figure somebody at the IMF, which has enormous amounts of fake money to throw around like there's no freaking tomorrow, would know that too. And the thing is, they do know. That's the stated intention of the IMF, World Bank, scholarly white papers reveal that their intentions of funding third world development projects are merely to take control over natural resources, state institutions, so that they can consolidate nations, whole nations, into their fold, so they can do whatever the heck they want with them. It's making an entire country full of people forced into receivership. You know, this is what's happening. People don't see it because they just don't read the articles at Guerrilla Media. Speaking of which, Ireland bailout has done nothing to save the EU. And from the New Zealand Herald, concern about Europe's financial crisis was at the forefront of investors' minds today as they sold equities, the euro and the government's debt of Belgium, Hungary, Italy and Spain. The weekend bailout of Ireland and its banks has done nothing to ease the threat of contagion. In fact, it appears to have had the opposite effect. Now, I talked a lot yesterday about how I have this total lack of surprise by all these things reported by mainstream media. Hey, we've got people monstrously into debt. Oh, apparently it's not going to do anything to help us get out of debt. Not a surprise. Come on. Now, we are starting to see many warning signs of global contagion, including lower US stock prices, Zach Pandel, economist at Nomura Securities International in New York, told Reuters. In morning trading, the Dow Jones Industrial Average slid 0.44%. The Standard & Poor's 500 Index declined 0.62%, and the NASDAQ Composite dropped 1.11%. Quite significant drops in a single day, wouldn't you think? The CBOE Volatility Index, Wall Street's so-called fear gauge, jumped 5.76% to 22.77. The idea of a contagion has been taken more seriously both in the European Union and how it might affect US markets, David Katz, principal and senior portfolio strategist at Wiser Capital Management, told Reuters. The €85 billion emergency loan package for Ireland and plans for a permanent system to resolve debt crises announced on Sunday seemed only to have renewed investors focused on how deeply in debt some European governments are. In Europe, the Stoxx 600 ended the session 0.1% lower, and two stocks fell for each one that rose. The chaos that is being generated from financial crises puts the international bankers at a wonderful position to propose solutions. They have already put into effect a new global currency called the Bancor. Previous to that, they already had a pseudo-global currency called special drawing rights. The goal of this financial crisis, the chaos that will be promoted as a result of it, is going to make everybody just think, oh, goodness, we need a global currency regulated by international bankers that caused the crisis. After all, how are we ever going to be saved from the crisis they caused other than letting the people who caused the crisis rule the entire planet? You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on American Freedom Radio and the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Oh, yeah, welcome back to the Vinnie Eastwood Show without Will on American Freedom Radio and the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Zeitgeist Addendum promotes theosophy, socialism, and the New World Order. That went in from davidike.com, posted on October the 15th. And this was just revealed to me by a good friend of mine, John Eisen from uncensored.co.nz. He emailed this one to me, and I quite frankly don't check my email too often, so a bit late, but... But timing is everything. On September 29th, the United States stock market crashed, falling 777 points, and just in time for the fallout, a worldwide financial collapse, the movie Zeitgeist Addendum was released. The film, right on cue, explains the obvious, how a flawed financial system failed and how it exploited the hard work, savings and investments of all those that lost their money to the system. It simultaneously heaps blame on free markets and religion while calling for a global shift in consciousness. The new paradigm, of course, is an old paradigm. It's an open call for socialism. One need look no further than Karl Marx to see the parallels between Zeitgeist addendums linking a distaste for free markets and religion, and this should set off some rather loud alarm bells in the minds of patriotic and freedom-loving people. Now, just bear in mind, I actually do like the Zeitgeist films. I agree with 90% of what's in there, and I'm indeed intimately linked with the Zeitgeist movement New Zealand up here in Auckland. My mates, you know, organise the things. I've uploaded videos for them. So I'm looking at it. It's important to challenge your own beliefs and what you do, right? Because otherwise, you're probably a member of a cult. Most of those that have been actively observing the global elite have likewise understand that a pre-planned financial collapse has been in the works for some time. Nicolas Sarkozy, president of the EU, says he wants a new global economic system to rise out of the ashes of this crash, which in his own words is expressed as a new world order. Zeitgeist addendum seems to further the case for this new world order neo-socialist paradigm, with America politicians and representatives ignoring the masses and passing off the debt of banks onto the general public. One can see the seeds of a new world socialism emerging right there in America. It's no coincidence that just as the new world order begins implementing Marxism thought in so-called free countries, Zeitgeist addendum shows up to incite the masses in a global call for Marxism. Sounds about right, doesn't it? And this is the freaky thing about it, is that there's a lot of suspicion about Zeitgeist, a hell of a lot. But on the same token, though, everybody in the truth movement has got suspicion. Seriously, everybody. Even me. I've been accused by, so far, two people of being an agent. You know, absolutely no evidence to support it whatsoever, but still, people will accuse, and not do any research to back it up, and not do any further investigation on the fact before accusing somebody of being an agent. There are those in the truth movement, of course, that are very highly suspicious, and there is many documented cases where they'll be promoting New World Order agendas, Zeitgeist being one of them. Intention, however, is incredibly difficult to prove. Now, if one should prefer to save 2 hours and skip watching Zeitgeist Addendum, its proposals are clearly spelled out in a relatively unknown book entitled The Externalization of the Hierarchy, written by Alice Bailey, a well-known occultist who started up a publishing arm called Lucifer Trust, later on called Lucius Trust. Actually, Bailey claimed to have channeled an ascended master known as the Tibetan, or Dijwal Kul, who penned the book through her. Bailey was also the founder of the Theosophical Lucifer Trust, as I just mentioned earlier. And please note that the solution to the faltering global economy offered by Zeitgeist Addendum is the Venus Project. Venus, also known as the Morning Star, is synonymous with the term Lucifer. All right. Now, those of you who are unaware of occult symbolism, things of this nature, do some research, man, because it is freaky as heck. I kid you not. Once you know what an occult symbol is, you suddenly realize, oh my God, they're absolutely everywhere. Did you know that a five-pointed star is an occult symbol? What kind of stars are on the US flag? Occult five-pointed stars. What kind of stars are on the EU flag? Occult five-pointed stars. What kind of stars are on the Chinese flag? Occult five-pointed stars. Same on, same old, over and over and over again. Once you know about occultic symbolism, you realize, you don't begin to see it everywhere, you realize that it's been everywhere the whole time, but you just never knew. And what these people believe is that if they put their symbols and all this kind of stuff everywhere, that, oh, it's going to draw them power for Lucifer. You know, evil Luciferian scumbags like Alice Bailey believe that this is a great thing, that it's going to illuminate everybody. Because Lucifer, unlike most people, is not in fact the Prince of Darkness, is in fact the Angel of Light. Many people don't know that. When people talk about the Illuminati, so to speak, it's because they're Illuminati worshipping of Lucifer. Mm-hmm. That's right. Now, I'm not saying that I believe in Lucifer or any of these occult symbols or anything, but the elite do. They believe it hand over fist. That's why they're so crazy, because they're just not dealing with reality. They are off their freaking rockers. And if you study history, and more of the point, if you study elite rulers throughout history, through various any denominations, you will see a pattern emerge that eventually, after having much amounts of dictatorial power, that they go freaking nuts. And they believe then that the people that they're supposed to be ruling over and protecting are the enemy, because they threaten their domination. And this is what the New World Order is really about. It's about setting up a system where the domination of today's elites could never be challenged, ever. A world police force, a world army, world regulatory authorities, a world government. Can you imagine any country trying to break away from this system? What's going to happen to them? They get absolutely annihilated. The only option is to stop said system from becoming implemented. This has given rise to the truth movement of late with great success. Every website of truth or origin is becoming more and more popular, more highly read. The news, in many cases, whether it be Fox News in America or TV3 News in New Zealand or 60 Minutes or whatever other mainstream publications, previously when these subjects had been absolutely taboo, are now beginning to cover them. Whether it be issues of cannabis, international banking, drug wars, or police state measures, 2012, all of these things that truthers have been going on about for ages are now just starting to make it into the mainstream. And it seems to me, at least, that there is a momentum building, and many are believing that the almost as if time is speeding up, right? As if more and more and more is happening all the time, and we're just running to catch up with it. Now, for those who've seen Zeitgeist Addendum, there's a little quote from it. The problem of money will have to be faced. The problem of the distribution of wealth, whether natural or human, will need careful handling and a compromise reached between those nations which possess unlimited resources and those who have few or none. The problem of the varying forms of national government must be faced with courage and insight. The restoration, psychological, spiritual, and physical, of mankind must constitute a primary responsibility. The sense of security must be put on a firm basis, the basis of right relationship, and not the basis of force. Men must feel secure because they are seeking to develop international goodwill and can trust each other and are not therefore dependent upon the strength of the armies and fleets. And for those who've seen Zeitgeist Addendum, this should sound familiar, as it's the basis for the entire film. Bailey's EOTH also includes specifics as to the nature of the New World Order, and the following are just some of the links between Bailey's work and Zeitgeist Addendum. The New World Order will recognize that the produce of the world, the natural resources of the planet and its riches, belong to no one nation, but should be shared by all. Sounds exactly like Zeitgeist Addendum to me, and this is a quote taken directly out of Alice Bailey's book. There will be no nations under the category haves and others under the opposite category. A fair and proper organization distribution of the wheat, the oil, and the mineral wealth of the world will be developed based upon the needs of each nation, upon its own internal resources and the requirements of its people. All this will be worked out in relation to the whole. The New World Order will be founded on the recognition that all men are equal in origin and goal, but that all are at differing stages of evolutionary development. That personal integrity, intelligence, vision, and experience, plus a marked goodwill, should indicate leadership. The domination of the proletariat over the aristocracy and bourgeoisie, as in Russia, or the domination of an entrenched aristocracy over the proletariat and middle classes, as has been, until lately, the case in Great Britain, must disappear. The control of labour by capital or the control of capital by labour must also go. In the New World Order, the governing body in any nation should be comprised of those who work for the greatest good of the greatest number and who at the same time offer opportunity to all, seeking it that the individual is left free. Today, the men of vision are achieving recognition, thus making possible a right choice of leaders. It was not possible until this century. The New World Order will be founded on an active sense of responsibility. The rule will be all for one, and one for all. Interestingly enough, one of the phrases in the song, that's the theme song for this show. This attitude among nations will have to be developed. It is not yet present. Now, there are, again, these type of references are absolutely everywhere. Now, if you're paying attention to the news, particularly environmentalism, things of this nature, and socialists, they are just chock-a-block with Alice Bailey-inspired stuff. Even parts of this show, unwittingly, admittedly, because I didn't know about Alice Bailey until I started co-hosting the show with Will, and he informed me quite a bit about these Luciferian ideas. And what my consideration is, I mean, instead of having a one-world global system, you know, all for one, one for all, I think just like having separation of powers in the US government worked for, I don't know, 20 minutes. But all powers need to be separated, because if they're not, it lends itself to corruption, invariably. All the time. He who has the gold makes the rules. He who has all the power becomes corrupted absolutely. And any type of world system, which many tyrannical figures throughout history have been working towards, many have failed after trying very hard. In fact, nobody's ever managed to take over the world fully. Yet. But today, in our age of technology, it just may be possible. But there's a split, there's a, shall we say, a hole in the tapestry. Because technology has gotten to the point where you can enslave people very effectively, it's also developed to the point where you can free people much easier than ever thought possible. Information is the key to freeing one's mind, and I would think that anything that I know, I act under the assumption that it's wrong, and I merely wait for the evidence to be produced. Like me, yeah, yeah, yeah. Congratulations, you made it. Welcome to the Crusader. It's been a long time coming, yo. Yeah, but I'm here now. So what you wanna do? Huh? How many dudes you really know can flow like this? Like this, let's do it. How many dudes you know roll like this? How many dudes you know flow like this? Not many, infinity, not many, infinity. How many dudes you know got the skills to go and rock a show like this? I don't know anybody. Check, check to the mic, check. 1, 2, 3. Yeah, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. On American Freedom Radio and, incidentally, the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Last quote from Alice Bailey: the key to understanding why the New World Order has chosen to expose itself lies in Bailey's Externalization of the Hierarchy, is a book that you can read if you like. The New World Order must be appropriate to a world which has passed through a destructive crisis and to a humanity which is badly shattered by the experience. The New World Order must lay the foundation for a future world order which will be possible only after a time of recovery or of reconstruction and of rebuilding. Now, this is the thing. When we're talking about crises, reacting to crises can sometimes be a very dangerous prospect. Chief among the dangerous prospects of them is the solution worse than the original problem? Take the war on terror, for example. Heart goes out to the families of the victims of 9/11. In my opinion, a government terrorist attack, false flag. Regardless, the reaction to this, Afghanistan and Iraq, if we just take those two into account, millions of deaths. And if not deaths, certainly lots of injuries and illness, particularly in Iraq with the excessive use of depleted uranium, which if you go back to our archive section on the VinnieEastwoodShow.com and have a look at some of our archives there, we had, I forget who it was, talking about the excessive amount of DU radiation that exists in Iraq, causing, deformed babies in 1 in 4 cases. Kid you not. And the most often asked question by Iraqi parents is not, is it a boy or a girl? Is it normal? Imagine the horrifying reality of having troops on the streets, shooting people for no reason in many cases, as is happening in Iraq. Quarter of all babies being born deformed, some way, shape, or form, and in a lot of cases, horrifically deformed. And then being told that you're a terrorist as a result. Because 3,000 people died in a couple of buildings. And that justifies it, right? I think it's a prime example of how the solution to a problem is far, far worse than the problem itself. So when people are proposing solutions, mostly proposing solutions, keep that in mind. Because often it is without a full grasp or understanding of problems that the solutions will wind up going awry. In my opinion, of course. Could be wrong. I certainly hope I am. But history will probably prove me correct. Now, I was thinking, what was it? Oh, yeah. FDA. Speaking of solutions. FDA smacks down chelation therapy. This is from the Washington Post, written by Rob Stein. Federal health officials on Thursday announced a crackdown on controversial therapy widely hawked on the internet and elsewhere as an alternative treatment for conditions such as autism, Alzheimer's disease, and Parkinson's disease by, quote-unquote, cleansing the body. That's what chelation therapy does. It basically removes heavy metals from the body, even removes heavy metals from the neural pathways, and in many cases has relieved people of such symptoms. And naturally, the FDA, being the people who allow incredibly dangerous psychotropic drugs to flood the market with absolutely no testing that is of any real relevance, no double blinding, no placebo effect tests, nothing. They naturally say that, anything that's actually having some kind of effect that isn't approved by us, we're going to ban it. The FDA said it has sent warning letters to several companies notifying them that the substances they sell without a prescription for a procedure known as chelation are unapproved drugs and devices, which makes them illegal. But of course, if it's incredibly dangerous, it's totally legal. Especially if the side effects are murder and killing. Now, the agency became alarmed about the growing promotion and easy availability of the product because the substances may cause serious health complications, like being relieved of autism or Alzheimer's, including dehydration and kidney failure, which they also say happens with excessive vitamin C consumption, which is another lie. You know, Fraud Drug Administration. That's what they do. They just administer fraudulent drugs to everybody and tell them that they're good. You know, they don't tell you that a lot of the drugs that they give you are all, especially drugs for depression like Prozac, Zoloft, and all of that, use fluoride, sodium fluoride, not the commonly known beneficial for your teeth calcium fluoride, which occurs naturally in some water supplies. Sodium fluoride is used as a neurotoxin. To help people with their depression. And in fact, in the gulags of Russia, it was so effective at relieving depression that they decided to put it into a water. And everybody was so happy that they could be guarded with only a quarter of the original guard stations. Isn't that brilliant? But nobody knows this, do they? And even if they do, it's incredibly difficult to get anybody, a government, to listen to you. Regardless of how much facts you have, regardless of how much evidence you have, they've got their own, which are all lies, which they believe hand over fist, because it's from the government. You're listening to the Vinny Eastwood Show. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinny Eastwood Show, hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. Ooh, yeah. Now, speaking about Unity or whatever, I don't think it's something that you should subscribe to, much like police, for example. You know, they'll be united and they view an attack on one as an attack on all. And it reminds me of this little bit of info my producer sent me a couple of days ago, I believe it was, providing a psychological experiment. The experiment was like this. You had two people running a truck company and two different roads that they could go on. One of the roads was a one-way, and they had these gates on either end, which each truck company controlled. The idea is to make the most amount of money. The one-way street, obviously much shorter distance, much more profit to be made, but the fact that they had a competitive environment meant that they would stop each other by closing gates to prevent them entering into said route, so they had to go the long way round. Now, there were a couple of different associates with this experiment that what's it called? Yeah. You know what a zero-sum game is? It's when there's one winner and one loser, clearly defined. But what they found very interesting is when they changed the dynamic of this, when they didn't give either of these people control over the gates leading to the shorter route to make more money, each person made more money despite the fact that the competitive environment still existed. Now, it turns out that when you threaten somebody, the ability of that person to care about you or want to help you or even want to listen to you gets diminished quite rapidly. And this is what's happening in our society, really, as we've gone to the point where everybody's so competitive with each other that we're stopping ourselves from developing because we're focusing on competing with each other rather than improving ourselves to a large degree. Personally, I think that self-improvement is one of the most important things you can ever hope to achieve in your life. And it's not actually that hard to do. You just need to not be an idiot. Which isn't that difficult. Apparently, you know, where in the heck are good, decent people these days? Eh? I can tell you now that they are freaking everywhere. All right? They're not on television. They're not in Parliament. They're not running businesses. Oh, well, some of them are. Some of the less successful businesses. They're certainly not running mega corporations, I can tell you that. You don't get to the top of any corporate supply food chain unless you are a total sociopath, in my considered opinion. Because after all, truth and concern for other people is a huge barrier to success in business, I can tell you now. You're listening to The Vinnie Eastwood Show. Coming up next, a fabulous activist from New Zealand, Penny Bright, will be joining me to talk about her trip with Transparency International, or rather, lack of Transparency International. We'll be right back.
Divided we fall. What is about? There's something evolving. Whatever may come, the world keeps revolving. They say the next big thing is here, that the revolution's near. But to me it seems quite clear that it's all just a little bit of history repeating.
Hey! Welcome back, baby. Boogieing it down at the Vinnie Eastwood Show, because it's all just a little bit of history repeating. My very special guest, the water pressure honey bunny that just is the... She's the fly in the ointment of every single corrupt individual in this entire country. They hate her, which is why I love her. It's Penny Bright. Penny, welcome back to the Vinnie Eastwood Show.
Cheers, Vinnie. Thank you very much. Well, I've just come back from a Transparency International conference in Thailand and the state civil society, private sector, blah, blah. And what they're looking at doing is restoring trust, global action for transparency. And what I discovered, absolutely incredible, that the issues that I'd raised in the Auckland mayoral campaign about the whole issue of let's cut out the contractors because no one's ever proved that's a better use of public money, that was just like a little microcosm of what's happening internationally. Guess what? The global market for procurement is internationally. Guess how much it's worth?
Several trillion, I'd imagine.
$14 trillion, which is $14,000 billion. Now, guess how much of that $14 trillion is estimated to be lost? $2.5 trillion, $2,500 billion. Well, that would help feed, clothe, and shelter a few poor people, don't you think? It all comes down.
That's not the interest, is it, though?
Yeah, but it's just what was really interesting to me was that, and I asked this question of this panel, you know, all these corporate heavyweights, and I said, well, aren't there a herd of elephants in the room? And I said, where's the due diligence that's being applied to the global procurement model? Where's the cost-benefit analysis that proves internationally that contracting out all these public services that used to be provided by central and local government, where's the evidence that that's more cost-effective use of public money than when these services were provided in-house? And literally, the guy that was chairing the panel, he did a double take as if I'd slapped his face. And nobody could, when I said, where's the evidence? And it hit me like a sledgehammer that the problem is everyone is focusing on this global private procurement, private contracting out process, but not the underpinning model. Like they're trying to make sure that, you know, the tenders are done in an open way and you look after your subcontractors and make sure that they are up to scratch and blah, blah. But nobody's saying, well, hang on a minute, let's back up the bus. Well, isn't it time we actually had a look at the model? Nobody actually raised that. And if you looked at the great list of subject matters that were discussed at this Transparency International conference, one of them was focused on the root cause of corruption, which is the private procurement model. Because like I say, it all comes down to who gets the contracts, how is it decided who gets the contracts. And what happened was, I took over what I call a corruption reality checklist based on New Zealand, because how Transparency International measure corruption is this Corruption Perceptions Index. And if you have a bit of a look and a bit of a swat at how do they arrive at this Corruption Perception Index, you find out that it's basically subjective opinion and anecdotal evidence, business people and experts. And it's like, well, hang on a minute, isn't that building your house on sand? They don't ask the public from countries all over the world, well, what's your perception of corruption in your own country? They don't ask people at the cutting edge of corruption, which is the whistleblowers, people like myself and in New Zealand, people like Grace Hayden and Vince Seymour. They just ask business people, and it's like, well, hang on. Okay, Vince, you're this very highfalutin business person. Now, do you give bribes? Oh, hello? Like you're going to put your hand up? Yes, I give bribes. My friends give bribes. Like, how flawed is that?
It's become such an accepted. It's become such an accepted reality. I remember when I was in the sales world, they were talking about a little thing that they had going on, a little sales force in Hamilton, and all these cars that they were parking up, that kind of thing. They kept on getting tickets from the local traffic wardens, and the boss of the company says to the whole crew, "All right, who's okay with bribery and corruption?" About 80-90% of their hands go up, and then they say, "All right, cool. Well, let's go talk to those parking wardens, bribe them and tell them not to get our tickets." And they never got a ticket again.
Oh, well, it's interesting. Like my opinion is this, that I don't know how much petty corruption we have in New Zealand of the type you've just mentioned, or, you know, you slip the cop $100 to get off a traffic ticket. I don't think that's
but as above, so below.
Well, I think it's more grand corruption, and I think I've identified where it takes place. And if you look at corruption stemming from the private procurement contracting out model, then you've got to look back to where does it come from, the underpinning legislation that allows contracting out or private procurement. And then when you have a good hard look at it, like I have, particularly with water, like, you know, we've just had railroaded through Parliament, the Local Government Act 2002 amendment, was Amendment Act now, where it allows for 35-year private water contracts, etc. Well, what I've found out there, and I believe this is evidence of corrupt practice, is that the policy analysts, what they do is they consult with people and they pretend that they're independent third parties when they've got vested financial interests. And what I discovered, to my shock and horror, was, for example, Local Government New Zealand, which claims to be the voice that speaks on behalf of 85 councils all over New Zealand, Well, guess what? They're not a creature of statute. If you look under the Local Government Act, they're nowhere to be found. They're an incorporated society. So where the hell do they get the statutory authority to claim to speak on behalf of 85 councils in the first place? And it gets worse. Local Government New Zealand, they got corporate sponsorship for their Local Government New Zealand conference they had this year at Sky City. They got corporate sponsorship from some of the very same Brits who would benefit from the 35-year private water contracts or public-private partnerships. Well, hello, Local Government New Zealand ended up pulling that legislation. So pay the piper, call the tune? How the hell is that not a form of corrupt practice? And not only that, the Society for Local Government Managers. That is an elected society, which is basically like the professional body for CEOs of councils. Well, they also supported the 35-year water contracts. But when you look on their website, they have a family of corporate sponsors. How cosy is that? And some of them are those very same corporates who will benefit from having their snout in the public-private partnership trough. How is that not corruption? Hello?
Yeah, well, everything's corrupt, anyway, Penny, isn't it?
What I did, and this went down a treat, because I took over 1,000 double-sided leaflets and I got rid of about 450 of them, okay? And on one side, it was a corruption reality check, which I developed for New Zealand, because New Zealand is perceived to be first equal, the least corrupt country in the world, along with Denmark and Singapore. Well, when I actually did, had a good hard look and looked at the United Nations Convention Against Corruption, the framework that they suggest for fighting corruption, and then I looked at New Zealand, well, get a load of this. Has New Zealand ratified the UN Convention Against Corruption? No. Does New Zealand have an independent anti-corruption tasked with educating the public and preventing corruption? No. Do New Zealand ensure transparency in the funding of candidates for elected public office and political parties at central government level? No. Do New Zealand as a parliament have a code of conduct? No. Do New Zealand local government elected reps have a code of conduct? Yes. Is it an offence for New Zealand government elected representatives to breach the code of conduct? No. Is there a law a publicly available register of interest for New Zealand local government elected reps? No. Is there a lawful requirement for a publicly available register of interest for New Zealand central government staff responsible for procurement? No. Is there a lawful requirement for a publicly available register of interest for New Zealand local government staff responsible for procurement? No. Is there a lawful requirement for details of contracts issued, including the name of the contractor, scope, term and value of the contract, to be published in New Zealand central government public sector and local government council annual reports so that they're available for public scrutiny? No.
No.
Is it a lawful requirement that a cost-benefit analysis of New Zealand central government public finances be undertaken to substantiate that private procurement of public services previously provided in-house is cost-effective for the public majority? No. And is it the same to have a lawful requirement for a cost-benefit analysis of New Zealand local government public finances available to prove that it's cost-effective for the public majority? No. Does New Zealand have a legally enforceable code of conduct for members of the New Zealand judiciary? No. Are all New Zealand court proceedings recorded and audio records made available to parties who request them? No.
No.
Is there a requirement for a publicly available New Zealand judicial register of interest? No. Is there a lawful requirement for a publicly available New Zealand register of lobbyists at central government ministerial level? No. Is there a legal requirement at New Zealand central and local government level for a post-separation employment quarantine period from the time officials leave the public service to take up a similar role in the private sector? No. Is it a lawful requirement that it's only a binding vote of the public majority that can determine whether public assets held at New Zealand central government or local government level are sold or long-term lease via public-private partnerships. No. Is it unlawful in New Zealand for politicians to knowingly misrepresent their policies prior to election at central or local government level? No. Do New Zealand laws promote and protect individuals, non-governmental organisations and community-based organisations who are whistleblowing against conflicts of interest and corrupt practices at central and local government level and within the judiciary? No. Perceived to be the least corrupt country in the world. Well, the other side of corruption is transparency. I've just read out 19 points here showing huge gaps in New Zealand's transparency framework, and yet we are perceived to be the least corrupt country in the world. Well, how can Transparency International get it so wrong? If they're so wrong for New Zealand, when we're supposed to be top of the food chain, what does it say about how meaningful their whole corruption perception index is in the first place? So what I suggested to Transparency International as the path forward was very simple, and I made these points at the closing plenary, and I asked the panel, what did they think? My view is very simple, that for countries that, given that it's the United Nations Convention Against Corruption, and whatever you think of the UN, and I don't support the UN taking over the world, I don't support one world government, I don't support the New World Order, but what I do agree with is best practice. And if we have here a legislative like framework that individual nation states can adopt, it's up to them whether they adopt it or not, but it's like a framework of best practice, then what the hell is wrong with using it? And that's my argument, is that countries which have yet to sign the UN Convention Against Corruption, sign it. Countries which have signed it but not yet ratified it, like New Zealand, ratify it. And the problem with ratification is you can't ratify it until you've actually got your domestic legislative framework in place to fight corruption, which New Zealand has not. Okay? And for countries that have ratified it, they need to implement it. And what where Transparency International could assist is coming up with a measurement of corruption based on reality, not perception. And my corruption reality checklist for New Zealand, you could put any country in there. It's just a draft. It can be fine-tuned. But I think those are key questions that have some basis in reality. Well, they have a very great basis in reality. And that's a far more sound measurement of how corrupt a country is, as opposed to, like I say, you know, anonymous business people and experts giving their subjective opinions.
That's what I'm talking about, you know. It's like when I went out with the camera to interview people like yourself and whatever, it's like the activists in our communities, the people who are actually watching all these things happen from the outside, don't have any loyalty to these corrupt institutions, so they're far better suited to being pundits than anybody who's on the take.
Well, that's right. And I mean, the last point that I suggested was that, I mean, Transparency International and all these different organisations, I believe they've got to take a step back, and we need to be demanding evidence from the World Bank, the Asian Development Bank, the IMF, the OECD. Which evidence are you relying on that proves your private procurement model is a more cost-effective use of public money, given that that's where corruption comes from, the contracting? That's it. And so what was interesting at the end, I mean, I worked very hard and I did, you know, Activism 101 and got business cards off about 90 different heavyweights and every possible opportunity to raise questions at workshops and plenaries. I stood on my hind legs and had a go. And what happened was at the end of the conference, this Bangladeshi guy who was a founding member of Transparency International and actually advises the board, he came up to me and shook my hand and he said that he thought out of 1,200 delegates that I'd made the most meaningful contribution, which I thought was rather sweet. But anyway, it was a marvellous opportunity and so, you know, seize the moment and shake the proverbial out of it. And but it's very interesting because coming back to New Zealand, it just seems over the last 2 weeks, the serious fraud office has certainly had a mighty great boot up the bottom, and suddenly they're actually using the C word, corruption. within 48 hours, the Serious Fraud Office announced that they were having an investigation into North Shore City Council for corrupt practices, where apparently a couple of council officers had been involved in corrupt practices involving up to $800,000. And then the very next day, they were looking at the Accident Compensation Commission for apparently some dodgy corrupt practices to do with something to do with property. So I believe that this is really helping to rev it up, and I'm looking forward to working with as many people as possible in New Zealand to say, come on, we must pressure our government to get a genuine anti-corruption legislative framework in place.
Indeedy do. And Penny Bright, ladies and gentlemen, in case you don't know, is well-versed, well-experienced in the processes of corruption when it comes down to it. You're listening to The Vinnie Eastwood Show at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. And we'll be right back after this short break. Just not the Barack H. O'Barry sense of the word. We can be more than ever. You're listening to The Vinnie Eastwood Show without Will. My very special guest is Penny Bright from waterpressure.wordpress.com. Been a good friend of mine for quite some time. And if you go to the vinnieeastwoodshow.com, click on the Mr. News Guerrilla Media YouTube channel and search Penny Bright in there. I've done a ridiculously large amount of videos for her because she's always got something ridiculously awesome to say. Much like the International Anti-Corruption Day, was that last year, Penny, where your gate crashed? Where your gate crashed? Transparency New Zealand's annual general meeting because they didn't give you any reasons why you weren't allowed to come as anti-corruption advocates. Of course, you know, you don't want them at anti-corruption conferences. Tell us what happened, Penny.
Oh, well, no, it was hilarious. But, I mean, the reason why we took it to the wire is we wanted to expose Transparency International New Zealand for what they are, which is basically an old boy, old girl network who want to maintain and perpetrate the myth and the fraud that New Zealand's the least corrupt country in the world. When, of course, when you heard what I said about the transparency framework we don't have, then obviously they should be doing a lot of work in our own country. I mean, Transparency International New Zealand wouldn't even support my petition that was before Parliament calling for details of contracts issued to be published in council annual reports. That wasn't an individual corruption case. That was a macro systems thing, and they wouldn't support it. So ask yourself. But what I got out of one of the guys that's attached to the Transparency International Secretariat was that Transparency International would do an investigation of the issues that have been raised. So anyway, so that was very successful. That was very successful as well. So it was a very, very productive conference, and I'd like to thank those people who did dig into their pockets to help send me over there. I can't turbocharge the broomstick to go that far, damn it. So so that was it was an investment. Have you guys heard that I've just had something that's come through from Jane Burgermeister, the anti-swine flu campaigner, that says that WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange, is that how he says his name? He has won an award from The Economist magazine, a financial publication controlled by the Rothschild banking family, and he's also figured on an Economist video clip, raising questions about a conflict of interest. Assange has predicted a bank run triggered by WikiLeaks data leaks in Forbes magazine without mentioning millions of people because of the way fractional reserve banking system works. So is this all hyped up to cause a run on the banks and whose interests are being served here. I've only just got that email myself, but I'm just putting the flag up, and I suggest that people have a look directly on Jane's blog, which is birdflu666.wordpress.com.
Yep. And also, just got the information in this morning that he is also now on the Interpol watch list. So whatever country he's in, he can be arrested.
But now, it's very
go ahead.
No, it's very interesting that to date he hasn't been. Like, you know, is it making it look like, oh, yo, they're out to get him? But in the meantime... looking at the big issues here, because when I've had a look at some of that WikiLeaks stuff that's you know, be publicised in mainstream media, it does seem a bit trivial. It's more gossipy, you know, whereas if some of this information is going to trigger a run on the banks, which could result in, you know, people being clamped down on more, you know, more than ever, I'm just raising the issue for people to consider. Have a think about it. Because the last thing I'd quickly like to raise is that... next week in at the Sky City Casino in New Zealand, what's happening is there are going to be negotiations on the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement, which is basically a mega treaty across 9 countries that's going to help encourage so-called free trade. And, of course, people know is that free trade actually equals privatisation. It's not for the benefit of the public. It makes it easier for corporations to get access to different countries. And what we have learned is usually what's good for big business ain't good for the majority of us. So very interesting. So that'll be happening next week, next Sunday. And yes, fascinating, because the thing is tying it together with the whole private procurement model. That's what free trade's all about, making it easier.
Well, that Trans-Pacific Partnership sounds an awful lot like a European Union-esque type thing, because they did the European Union, Strategic Economic Partnership before it became the actual EU. They do it in incremental steps, and I think this is probably one of the parts of the New World Order agenda is to... make these big mega blocks using economic treaties to bind them so that the companies can basically rule those countries. And then obviously most of those companies are owned by Rothschilds and Rockefellers and scumbags anyway, who have absolutely no interest in allowing people quality of life or even in many cases survival.
How come it's being that this Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement's being described as a trade agreement? And I'm just reading from a leaflet that Jane Kelsey helped put out here. And she says it's a clever branding exercise. It's really an agreement that guarantees rights to foreigners that operate out of any of the Trans-Pacific Partnership countries.
Yeah, it's not a trade agreement. It's not a trade agreement. It's a traitor agreement. Any country that signs that deal is selling out their entire nation hand over fist. It's that clean.
Well, it's not complicated. I mean, the world, you know, you can easily divide it into two camps. It's like human rights versus corporate rights, and it's like the rights of the majority of people in the world versus big business. And, I mean, Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement is effectively a bill of corporate rights for big corporations, and it's designed in secret. And what it does, it will tie future governments and, you know, the democratic and sovereign rights of that country to decide on future policy and laws. It's like sort of too late. And I mean, where did we, the people, get a say in this? I mean, it's our bloody country. These are our resources. It's our money. So what happened to the will of the people is the basis of the authority of government? What happened to that bit?
Yeah, I mean, oh, the poor mega corporations. We've got to protect them, you know, because they're so good for all of us, Penny. What have you got against big corporatized structures like fascism?
Well, what's very interesting, I've had a couple of interesting emails today, and I got one just come through from Professor Prem Sekar, who's he's just got this article published in The Guardian saying the ultra-rich could solve this financial crisis. And what he does is give some details about, and especially like in the UK, how much some of these billionaires get. And so that the news is that only about 330,000 public sector jobs will be lost. And, of course, that's of little comfort to millions of people, especially as another, this is in the UK, another 500,000 are likely to disappear from the private sector. The government's austerity plans will hasten home repossessions, shop closures, increase hospital queues, and condemn children to crumbling schools. Yet the Chancellor has been quiet about the contribution expected from the ultra-rich. And even Warren Buffett, who's the world's third richest person, and he's estimated to be worth $37 billion, he's urged the US government to tax the rich, saying people at the high end, people like myself, should be paying a lot more in taxes. Perhaps he's not feeling well. We have it better than we've ever had it. But there's a, in the Prem Seeker's view, is that the government can solve the financial crisis by inconveniencing the richest 1,000 people in the UK, whose collective wealth rose to about £335 billion. This is 1,000 people. That's just obscene. That is just
and meanwhile, people like that are living high and mighty, drinking $10,000 bottles of champagne, dining at Buckingham Palace with the Queen, while the Queen applies to get subsidies from the Poor Fund to heat her palaces.
I know. And also, this comes off.
And also, at the same time, that's happening in the UK. Got an article here on Guerrilla Media. Obama freezes government employees' salaries. They're doing this globally, Penny. Everybody needs to, you know, be a lot more, shall we say, scrupulous and have less money, except, of course, those who have the ridiculously large amount of majority of the wealth whilst being an infinitesimal tiny minority of the people.
Well, it's exactly right. I mean, something I discovered this week was that I've found a website that lists US defense contracts. And for 2009, guess how much was spent on US defense contracts? $322 billion. Now, it lists, it's very good. It actually lists the name of the company, how much they've received. But people need to back up the bus and ask themselves, well, hang on a minute. How much of that money, for example, is going to Iraq, which was, remember, weapons of mass destruction, which didn't actually happen, you know, there weren't any, and the whole 9/11 thing. So when you look at how much money is actually going to these specific companies, to specific shareholders, to specific people, and it's all based on bullshit in the first place, and meanwhile they don't have money for the poor people who really need it, you just makes you think, hey, because then the next exercise, and I don't know whether anyone in the USA has done it, but would be to track the politicians, do they have any interest in any of those defence companies? You know, that's what you've got to do, is always follow the money.
If Transparency International was really about transparency, they would be kicking ass right now. Right?
Well,
but
well, exactly,
they're not,
yeah.
Are they? They're just waffling around and doing jack.
Well, the thing is this, like as far as I'm concerned, if you're going to solve a problem, you go to the root cause of the problem. The root cause of the problem with bribery and corruption is the contracting out, the private procurement model. Because if there were no contracts, then you wouldn't have any of this dodgy stuff about, well, who, oh, we'll pay some money in order to get the contracts. If there's no contracts, there's no problem. So that's my view. Focus on the root cause of the problem, and if you want to minimise corruption, private procurement. Cut out the contractors.
Surgically.
Yes,
the thing that I find about this is, right, contractors are taking over public services. As far as I know, public service was meant to be in service of the public, whereas when you take that and you turn it into a profit mechanism, it becomes in the best interest to make the service less effective, less efficient, so that you can make more and more profit from doing a dodgy job many times rather than doing just a good job once, as the public service model would illustrate. But it's been demonized so much in recent times, particularly through economic neoliberal reforms, that people have bought the con that public is bad and private is grand.
Well, you see, the point is now is to demand the facts and evidence. Prove it. Let's have some facts to back up the mantra, because with my research I've done in the Auckland example of contracting out, the other thing that you discover, there's two lots of piggies in the middle. The first lot of piggies in the middle are the private shareholders of those private companies that have got the contracts, but the second lot of piggies in the middle are these whole huge raft of people who are involved in administering the contracts. You need procurement teams, and you need all this and that specialist to go through and make sure things are you're being done in a proper way. There's a whole stack of people and money being spent on contract administration, which you wouldn't need if you didn't have the contracts in the first place. It's not.
And therefore, the simple answer of a gangrenous leg is to cut that puppy off. And contractors, in Penny's considered opinion, is just nothing more than a wart-ridden gangrenous leg that's threatening to infect everybody and make us die. You're listening to the Penny Eastwood Show without Will, and we'll be right back.
I got some so-called friends. My right to my face, all when my back is turned. They like to bury me without a trace. Oh no, no. Oh no, no. There's only one thing I need to know. Who's that? Are you on?
Oh yeah, baby. Whose side are you on, ladies and gentlemen? Are you on the side of the corrupt, dictatorial, kleptocratic, scumbag, filthmongers? Or are you on the side of liberty and freedom and truth? I think I've made it quite clear what position I've taken. And my very special guest, Penny Bright from waterpressure.wordpress.com, couldn't be anything other than on the side of good. Penny, welcome back.
Cheers, Vinny. In terms of revelations,
Let's get biblical, people.
Yeah, well, it's just incredible picture stuff that blows your mind. What happened was that in light of railroading through this legislation to make it easier to privatise the water and have longer term contracts, what happened was I had this petition calling for this urgent inquiry into 7 United Water contracts, and that's been sitting as an item of business before Parliament for the last 11 months. Now, where's the due diligence when a concerned citizen puts a lot of work in and provides facts and evidence which shows that this model, this privatised model, may well be based on a rot and a fraud? Parliament does nothing. And
Probably the fact that United Water is owned by Veolia, which is owned by the Rothschilds, which own our government as well, might have something to do with it. Continue.
For example, the Office of the Auditor General, their job is to check, once government has decided where public money will be spent, the Office of the Auditor General, they are supposed to make sure that it's spent in a proper way. We'll back up the bus. Who is responsible before the legislation is passed to make sure that the government, before they pass legislation, that this legislation is going to, if it enables private procurement or contracting out or whatever, that that's going to be a better use of public money? Who does the checking and the due diligence before the legislation is passed? And guess what? It appears nobody. How unbelievable is that? Seriously, How unbelievable is that? Again, I feel like the little kid who's saying, the emperor is stark bollocking naked. What the hell is going on here? So that's it, folks. So what I really suggest you do is you find out stuff for yourself and don't be scared to ask the big questions and rattle that cage, because I tell you what, when you really start looking into it, you find out there's enormous things out there that are happening and there's been no due diligence. No due diligence at all. So we have to start applying that due diligence and then put the pressure on to say, nah, we're not wearing this anymore. No more.
It's the thing, isn't it, Penny? You know, citizens actually have to take responsibility for their government. I mean, for goodness sake, what's happening now is that people think that if you make one tick on one box once every couple of years, that you're contributing to society, that you're making a difference, that your vote matters. It does not matter in the slightest, because what happens whenever you elect these scumbags, one of the two big Tweedledum or Tweedledee parties will get in. This is the same regardless of which country you happen to live in. One of these big mofos will always be there in the dominant position to always be pushing through legislation that doesn't benefit all the people that voted. So the only way that you can actually get any kind of wrangling on this type of system is if the people of the country are consistently, openly, and honestly appraising the effectiveness of their government. And if people really did that the whole world over, there wouldn't be a single government really left standing in its current form, because, in my considered opinion, most of them happen to be in the upper echelons, hugely corrupt, hugely influenced by overseas backers, which have no concern about the lives and well-being of the general citizenry at all. So, it's our responsibility as citizens, or regardless of whatever you want to call yourself, a patriot or whatever, to keep an eye on our governments, because they are not acting in our best interest and they haven't been doing so for quite some time.
Well, you can take heart from the fact, and it is a fact, where the people lead, the politicians follow. And as far as civil society is concerned, it's my considered opinion, you're far more effective if you're not so civil. That's my experience. So anyway, that's what I mean, that people do. You look at how you can organise outside governments to put the pressure on, and that is actually the only way you're going to get any legislation or any movement that's going to serve the interests of the public majority. You only get what you fight for, and if you don't fight, you'll get nothing. So that's the go, folks. Get yourselves educated, find out what's going on, and take action, which can't be ignored.
Thank you very much, Penny Bright, for coming on the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to check out her material, go to waterpressure.wordpress.com. And I've made many videos with Penny in them, so you can go to YouTube and search Penny Bright, P-E-N-N-Y, Bright, B-R-I-G-H-T. And most notably, there'll be plenty of videos there, including videos of support of Jane Burgermeister over the swine flu scam, many lengthy lectures that Penny has given exposing the length and depth of corruption with our failed super city fabulous plan to rip everybody off, and various other things as well. She works harder than I would wager any other activist in this country. Thanks very much, Penny, for coming on the program.
Thanks for the opportunity, Vinny. Marvellous. Okay, take care.
Yes. Catch you later, love. There she goes, ladies and gentlemen. Penny Bright, the one and only and fantastically fabulous lady of anti-corruption perception. You've been listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, and thank you very much for doing so. I hope you've learned something today. I know I certainly have. And we'll be back tomorrow, and I believe we have a very special guest coming at us all the way from the streets of Wellington, and Mr. Benjamin Easton, to talk about fabulous bloodshed on the nice new Manners Mall, which has been turned into a bus lane, which is now resulting in the injuries of many people. So that'll be a nice, cheery and lighthearted show, I think. We'll be right back tomorrow.